flying rocks and rats pelted the companions on the raft as the nonstop sound of blasters rattled from the unseen wreckage of the war wag as the vast stores of ammo cooked off from the intense heat. Then it was clear that a claymore had triggered, and finally, it was the sound of splintering stone.
Cave in!
Ryan feared that he'd gone too far in trying to take out the rats as pieces of the ceiling began to drop away. Stones, bricks, and blobs of mud. Mildred lost her grip on the MP5, the rapid fire sailing away into the darkness before she grabbed the canvas strap and reclaimed the blaster. Keen to battle pitch, Ryan jerked to the side as bricks scraped down along the side of his arm. Doc staggered as another slammed into his backpack, and Jack had his Colt Python knocked from his grasp. The silvery weapon went tumbling toward the water and bounced off a shiny stalagmite. In foolhardy bravado, Jack lurched forward, nearly going off the shaking raft to catch the blaster while it was still in midair. Pulling it back, he frowned and flipped over the blaster to start shooting at the churning river. A moment later, a dead white alligator rose from the depths and snapped at the teenager, even as he fired again and again into the open maw.
Gator!
Mildred burped the MP5 until the clip was empty. Quick drawing the ZKR, she fired directly into the red eyes of the albino monster. Clear fluids erupted from both hits, and the reptile reared backward to roll sideways below the waves.
Thank Gaia, that was no Frankenstein.
Christy was referring to a mutie alligator they had once fought. That damn thing had been all but bulletproof. Mildred reloaded her weapons with trembling hands.
Agreed.
Moving fast, JB grabbed the netting and tried to recover an MRE pack, but jerked his hand back just in time as the gator rose from the murky depths, its ruby-red eyes staring directly into his own, filled with malevolent intelligence.
Triple damn gator still alive!
Ryan thumbed a fresh cartridge into the belly of the scattergun, and then put four rounds into the pale gator peeking out of the choppy waves. The gator glowed like a radblast ghost in the bright beam of the nuke lamp. Tying the netting closed with a piece of explosive primer cord from his munitions bag, JB turned and pulled out an implogren, only to shove it back in again and try twice more before finding what he wanted. Not a spherical gren, but a pair of squat canisters. Bingo, as Millie liked to say. Priming the two charges, JB turned and tossed them both just ahead of the bobbing raft. They sank without a trace.
What'd you do?
Jack holstered his empty blaster and swung around the rapid fire to send a short burst into the mud. Rats moving below the surface died.
We're picking up speed.
JB counted on his fingers. As he reached the number 6, he relaxed slightly.
Anything tossed in front of us will soon be in our wake. So...
The shallow river was illuminated, and the surface roiled to vomit up rats, the gator, and eel-like snakes in every direction. Buffeted by the blast, the companions were hit by a wave of stinking filth. Then an exhalation of stinking hot gas that stole the air from their lungs. The companions turned away from the growing fireballs in the boiling river, the twin thermite charges expanding and building in force as the non-stop chem reactions actually used the oxygen in the water to fuel the hellstorm of lambent annihilation. Smoke, flames, steam, and screams filled the passageway as impossibly brilliant light increased in brightness until the skin of the companions prickled from the raw energy reflecting off the muddy walls.
Sweet Jesus!
Finally, the ceiling gave way, and the aft tunnel collapsed. Rocks, bricks, and boulders plummeting into the water. Pivoting, Ryan threw Christy the scattergun. He pulled the stire and turned it over to use the flat stock as a crude oar.
Start paddling!
Kneeling, Christy did the same, and the raft began to move slightly faster. Spreading outward, the destruction increased in violence. Waves rose and fell around the homey craft, as if it were caught in a squalid sea. A swell threw them high enough that the companions had to duck, and the stacks of supplies smacked into the irregular ceiling. When they dropped back down with a sickening lurch, Ryan held onto the raft for dear life, but the impact broke his grip, and he went flying. He landed flat on his back at the edge of the raft, with Doc flailing right alongside. Clawing to stay aboard, the two men watched helplessly as a nuke lamp broke free of its mooring and went over the side. The instant the hot headlight touched the cold water, the glass shattered, and the light went out. Then the nuke battery cracked and split apart. Blue sparks danced along the surface of the river, and a score of rats went stiff before rolling over to float belly up. Grabbing onto the lashings, Ryan and Doc hauled themselves from the brink and back to safety. The electric discharges continued for another few heartbeats, then died out, leaving only a wretched stink in the damp air. Ryan pointed at the last nuke lamp.
Tie that other lamp down tight!
Nodding, Doc got busy with both hands. If the second lamp died, the companions would be trapped underground in total darkness, entombed alive. Behind the raft, more rocks and debris poured from the violated ceiling until a mound rose from the river and a newborn island. Unexpectedly, the walls collapsed across the river, joining the island mound into a crude dam. Then a large slab of brickwork came crashing down like a guillotine, nearly closing off the underground passageway. The rumblings of the destruction slowly began to fade as the companions continued to rush with the current. But the water level was dropping again, and their speed was decreasing. While Ryan and Christy renewed their efforts at paddling, the others reloaded their weapons and checked for any damage. Everybody had bites and scratches, but none was serious, and Mildred passed around a double dose of antibiotic tablets from the deep storage locker. The physician had no way of knowing if the medicine was still potent, but it was the best she had against the dire possibility of infection. After a short while, the rumbling crashes were left behind, and there were only a handful of rats swimming alongside the bobbing raft. With ruthless efficiency, J.B., Doc, and Christy took care of them. And soon the companions were alone in the slowing river. Hours passed without any incidents, with everybody poised in combat readiness. After a while, Doc and Jack replaced Ryan and Christy at the paddling, then J.B. and Mildred. In spite of the accidental dam in their wake, the river was still flowing, just noticeably lower than before. In the stark white beam of the last nuke lamp, they could clearly see a scummy green line along the smooth wall, where the water level used to reach. Warily, Ryan noticed that there weren't any stalactites or stalagmites anymore, or roots festooning the ceiling, or mud on the walls. Just a seamless expanse of what seemed to be pre-dark concrete, the material smooth and undamaged. Pumping up her little flashlight, Mildred played the pale beam around for a better look.
This is a pre-dark sewer.
By God, I think we've been traveling through one all this time.
Ryan watched the half-burned corpse of a dead rat float past.
Good. Sewers always have manholes. As soon as we find a ladder, we can get out of here.
And then back to the redoubt?
If we can find it again.
Rolling out of the morning fog, the four big men riding the sleek black two-wheelers raised their pre-dark rapid fire and opened fire at the line of wooden carts. All along the caravan of pilgrims, people cried out and fell over, ghastly wounds pumping red blood. The ragged line of wheeled carts came to an abrupt halt, and the men scrambled for weapons while the swayback horses went absolutely still at the sound of guns. The animals knew the noise always was a herald of death, and the only protection was to not move.
Son of a bitch!
A sec man leapt out of a cart, a cloth napkin tied around his neck, his face and mustache smeared with greasy soup. Crouching, he leveled a remade scattergun and cut loose with both barrels. The barrage of nails and broken glass missed the racing group of Rogan brothers, the makeshift ammo rattling the leaves of the nearby trees. Breaking to a halt, Edward grinned evilly and replied with a 40mm Gren launcher slung under the barrel of the M16 assault rifle. The fat shell hit the set man, but the range had been too close for the pre-dark warhead to arm. Instead of exploding, the 40mm round slammed into the chest of the man like a flying sledgehammer. Ribs shattering, internal organs crushed, blood and viscous fluid sprayed from the mouth of the startled man, and he flew backward to land sprawling in the dirt. Alan sprayed a group of women and children, fleeing into the bushes.
This is too fucking easy.
John pointed a bony finger.
Frag that. There he is.
A fat man with a patch on his right eye threw a hatchet at the Coldhearts, and Robert barely managed to duck out of the way, the spinning weapon clanging off the shiny chassis of his bike.
Not good enough, Phoebe.
Robert shot the man several times in the belly, opening his stomach like a can of spaghetti. A burly man threw down a homie zip gun and raised both hands.
We surrender! Take what you want! We surrender!
You fool! We're not taking prisoners.
As the truth became apparent, the rest of the pilgrims broke ranks and took off in every direction, casting aside their belongings to hasten their speed. Revving the silent engines of the military two-wheelers, the Rogan brothers started circling the people, shooting them down as if ammo grew on trees. As the last of the pilgrims fell, the Rogans returned to the fat man with one eye. Retrieving the thrown hatchet, Alan braked his bike to a halt, then climbed off. Testing the edge of the weapon on a thumb, the man knelt by the corpse and started to hack away, soon removing the head to add it to the collection of grisly trophies nearly filling the cargo pods of his bikes. Edward reloaded his rapid fire.
Think that's him?
No way. There's no woman with black skin, albino, mutie, or redheads in this batch, and no silver-haired wrinkly.
So we hit the Nixville?
Soon as Alan is done with the harvesting.
John turned off his bike to let it recharge a little. The battery still carried a half charge, but life had taught him the harsh lesson that survival often depended upon a bite of food, a single brass, or a sip of water. Waste meant getting killed. No more, no less. Looking over the field of death, John rested the hot rapid fire on his shoulder as he studied the body stretched out in the grass like shrapnel from an explosion. Nobody was even vaguely close to the protection of the trees, and every body was clearly torn apart. There was nobody only pretending to be aced in this bunch, like the last group.
All set.
Alan tucked the one-eyed head into a cargo pod. Flipping the hatchet into the air, he caught it by the wooden handle, nodded in satisfaction, then tucked it into his belt. John revved the silent engine of the bike. The gauges fluttered alive, and the dashboard became illuminated.
And let's go. We've got a lot more chilling to do.
The manhole cover moved aside, and JB crawled onto the cracked asphalt. Moving out of the way, the armorer brought up the Uzi as he looked around for any danger. But the streets seemed clear, the ruins stretching for blocks in every direction. A moment later, Ryan levered himself out of the opening and slid the Steyr off his shoulder to work the bolt. The air was hot and dry, sweet nectar after the pungent stink of the sewer. Dilapidated buildings dotted the sandy landscape, along with fire plugs, mailboxes, and all of the usual trappings of pre-dark civilization. They had found the ruins of a pre-dark city. It was about time their luck changed. As the two men stood guard, Christy came out of the manhole, her revolver sweeping for targets. Bending, she offered a hand to Mildred. The sweat-drenched physician accepted the help and awkwardly clambered onto the asphalt, hauling her canvas medkit. Jack came next. But halfway out, the teenager sat on the rim of the hole and drew his Colt Python to aim the blaster into the darkness. Quickly, Jack moved out of the way, and Doc climbed into the sunlight with a smoking Ruger in his hand. Together, they fired their weapons into the blackness, illuminating the subterranean passageway. Nodding in thanks, Doc holstered his Ruger and released the rope tied around his waist. Passing the end to the others, Doc stood guard while the rest of the companions started pulling. Like fish on a stringer, one by one, the backpacks were hauled out of the sewer and laid on the cracked street. Mildred looked over the group.
Anybody hurt?
Thankfully, there was no fresh blood spilled, and nobody was grimacing in pain.
Good enough.
Walking across the street, Mildred leaned against the rusted remains of a car and tried to catch her breath. She was exhausted, but stoutly refused to leave any of the important medical supplies behind. With the MP5 and its spare ammo, the physician knew that she was carrying too much weight. But she just couldn't relinquish any of the antibiotic pills, or especially the surgical gloves. No more barehanded surgery. She would never leave those behind. Doc gestured at the open manhole.
Should we prepare an egress, my dear Ryan?
Frowning deeply, Ryan wasn't sure what the word meant, but he understood the gesture.
No. Close it up tight. That blaster fire's gonna summon all sorts of attention that we don't want. Get your packs and let's move.
The bolt-action long blaster had been thoroughly cleaned during their long journey through the sewer, and was now in working order again. It had been a good thing that he'd been cautious and double-checked it before using it. The barrel had indeed been blocked solid with condensed fuel and mud. Pulling the trigger on the Steyr would have been disastrous. Strong is good, but smart is better, as the trader liked to say. Working in unison, Jack and Doc manhandled the heavy iron cover back into place. Then JB attached a wire and rigged a claymore mine under a nearby civvy wag, the curved front of the directional charge pointing at the sewer opening. Anybody moving the manhole would get blown in two from behind. Christy glanced around the ruins. She wasn't getting any feelings of being observed, but that didn't mean they were alone. The companions gathered their belongings and started along one of the dusty streets, carefully keeping in the sunlight and out of the dangerous shadows. Until they had done a wreck, nothing was to be taken for granted. Their travels had taken them a long way in the dark, and there was no way of knowing where they were until JB had a chance to use his sextant.
Anybody recognize the town?
Not in the least.
Most of the buildings in sight were pretty tall, 5, 6, some of them even 7 stories. But there were also the remains of a skyscraper, or at least what Ryan could only guess might have been a skyscraper. The structure stopped at about the 9th floor, the marble exterior broken to expose twisted beams of rusty steel. They'd all seen that sort of damage before. Most likely, something large blown along by the nuke wind of Skydark had slammed into the building, or even a missile. Ryan wouldn't be surprised if they followed the angle of the breakage and found a glass-lined crater in the ground. Quickly, he checked the rad counter on his lapel, and was relieved to see only a normal background level of rads.